Welcome to the deep dive. Okay, picture this. The world's economy is just, well, imploding after the Wall Street crash. We're talking the Great Depression. And even the absolute pinnacles of luxury, like high-end car makers, they're facing disaster. It makes you wonder, how does a crisis like that actually lead to innovation, to, you know, unexpected partnerships that literally change history?
It's a fantastic question, and it really sets the stage for our deep dive today. We're going right into the early history of Bentley, an iconic brand for sure, but one that, maybe surprisingly, emerged directly from these incredibly tough times.
Exactly. We're going to unpack how Bentley, a company really on the ropes, gets bought by his biggest rival, Rolls-Royce, and then through some pretty amazing engineering, transforms into the silent sports car. A total legend, even now. So you'll hear about the smart strategies, the clever technical fixes that didn't just save a brand, but really created this icon of elegance and power. And maybe, just maybe, it shows how opportunity can sometimes pop up even when things look bleakest. We're diving into a story of real resilience.
We are, and the backdrop, as you said, is the Great Depression. That 1929 crash wasn't just numbers on a board, it absolutely hammered the luxury car market worldwide. Sales just dried up, confidence gone. Even the big names, the really established ones, were scrambling to survive. It was, well, an economic catastrophe.
And Rolls-Royce, I mean, Rolls-Royce, even they felt the pressure, right? Their usual market, those ultra-expensive, bespoke cars, it was shrinking fast.
Definitely. So their idea was, okay, let's design something new, smaller, maybe a bit more accessible, but crucially, it still had to feel like a Rolls-Royce. You know, that luxury, that quiet refinement. They were looking at their 2025 model, which had been received really well, as kind of a benchmark.
A tricky balance, trying to make something more affordable, but still, you know, unmistakably Rolls-Royce.
Absolutely. And this led to an internal project, codenamed Peregrine. The concept was for a car with a new 2.5-liter engine, room for four people, kind of a luxury family car for tougher times.
Okay, the Peregrine. And how did it shape up?
Well, in testing during 1932, it actually performed really well. Great handling, that smooth Rolls-Royce ride quality. It seemed like a solid contender.
So, sounds promising. A good design, decent engine, positive tests. What was the catch?
The catch was the cost. And Rolls-Royce's own standards, really. They realized that to build the Peregrine to their usual level of quality, the meticulous craftsmanship, the materials, they just couldn't hit a price point that would actually attract the buyers they needed in that depressed market.
Ah, so they'd have to compromise on quality to make it affordable.
Exactly. And compromising quality was just unthinkable for Rolls-Royce. It would undermine everything their brand stood for. So, yeah, they were kind of stuck.
Okay, so Rolls-Royce has this dilemma. Meanwhile, what about Bentley? How were they faring?
Oh, Bentley was in much, much worse shape. The market collapse hit them, as our sources put it, like a crippling blow.
Yeah.
Their big 8-liter car, an engineering masterpiece, really, and the smaller 4-liter version they just weren't selling.
And the racing. They were famous for Le Mans wins and all that. Mm-hmm. Didn't that help?
It built prestige. Absolutely. Huge prestige. But financially, the sources are clear. It was very financially damaging. They were burning through money. Imagine the situation at Bentley, this celebrated name, known for speed and power, just hemorrhaging cash on the brink.
Wow. So you've got Rolls-Royce with a great design they can't afford to build properly, and Bentley with a legendary name, but basically going bankrupt.
Precisely. It's this collision of crises that sets up the next really pivotal move. The acquisition.
The takeover. Rolls-Royce steps in.
Yes. In November 1931, Rolls-Royce bought the diminishing Bentley Motors. But interestingly, the first reason wasn't necessarily about building a new car.
Oh, what was it then?
Our sources suggest it was mainly a preventative action, almost defensive. They wanted to stop rivals, specifically Napier, from getting their hands on the Bentley name and assets.
Napier. Why were they worried about Napier getting Bentley?
Well, think about it. Rolls-Royce ruled the ultra-luxury roost, but Napier... they were a serious engineering competitor, known for powerful engines like Bentley. If Napier had grabbed Bentley, they'd instantly get that racing heritage, that sporty credibility. They could have launched a direct, powerful competitor to Rolls-Royce in that sort of performance luxury space.
Ah, I see. So buying Bentley wasn't just gaining something. It was stopping a rival from gaining something potentially very dangerous.
Exactly. A strategic block. It was about controlling the field, preventing a strong new challenger from emerging.
Clever. A real corporate chess move. And they did manage to keep W. Bentley himself involved, didn't they?
They did. They secured his services, and Bentley Motors LTD was officially formed in 1931, now under Rolls-Royce control.
So the initial move might have been defensive to stop Napier.
Right. But pretty quickly, Rolls-Royce looked at what they now owned, the Bentley name, the legacy, the sheer brand power, and they realized, hang on, this is an opportunity too good to be missed.
The light bulb moment. They could actually use this name.
Precisely. So the conversation shifted. Okay, we have this great name. We also have this Peregrine design that's almost there but too expensive as a Rolls. Could we modify the Peregrine, make it sporty enough, powerful enough to be genuinely worthy of sporting the Bentley moniker?
Because it couldn't just be a Rolls-Royce with a Bentley badge slapped on. It needed that Bentley spirit.
Right? Performance, exhilaration.
Absolutely. It had to feel like a Bentley. So the engineering challenge began. How do you inject that Bentley DNA? Some early thoughts involve supercharging the Peregrine engine, boost the power.
Seems logical for a performance brand. Why didn't that fly?
Reliability concerns. Straight up, supercharging back then, especially grafting it onto an existing design. Rolls-Royce engineers felt it was too risky. Remember, Rolls-Royce's reputation was built on absolute dependability. They weren't about to put out a Bentley under their ownership that might prove unreliable. That commitment to rock-solid engineering forced them down a different path.
Okay, so no quick fix with a supercharger. They needed a more fundamental solution for the engine. They did. And this led to the development of what they called the J1 engine. This was clever. It wasn't totally new. It was a derivative of their proven 2025 engine. Reliable baseline.
So modified.
Heavily modified for performance. It got a cross-flow cylinder head. Much better breathing for the engine. More power, more efficiency. It also had 6 inlet ports, twin SU carburetors, better fuel delivery, and a modified camshaft for different valve timing. Again, boosting performance.
So not just tweaking. Significant re-engineering to get power and maintain that Rolls-Royce reliability standard.
Exactly. Taking something solid and carefully, skillfully making it sporty without breaking it, it was quite an achievement.
And then fitting this new, sportier J1 engine into the car. Was that straightforward?
Not quite. In October 32, they decided to pair the J1 engine with the gearbox from the 2025. Solid, reliable gearbox. But fitting this bigger engine and gearbox combo into the original Peregrine chassis, it required changes. They actually had to increase the wheelbase, stretch the chassis a bit.
Ah, okay. So quite a bit of adaptation involved there, too. Re-engineering the engine, modifying the chassis to accommodate it.
Yes, it was a careful integration process, making sure everything worked together harmoniously, that the handling wasn't compromised. It took time and real skill.
So after all this work, the strategic acquisition, the engine development, the chassis modifications, when did the world finally get to see this new Bentley?
It took about 12 months of intensive development and testing, lots of hard work. But finally, the first Bentley 312L, as it was called, went to the press at the end of September 1933.
The Bentley 312 liter. And the reaction? Was it a success?
Oh, absolutely. It was met with great aplomb, according to our sources. The motoring press loved it.
Yeah.
It was a star at the 1933 motor show in Olympia. People immediately noticed its elegant proportions. It just looked right. And that look became a hallmark of the Derby Bentley. They were built in the Rolls-Royce factory in Derby, you see. It inspired some really stunning custom body styles from coach builders, too. It just had that perfect stance.
So then came that famous nickname.
Yes. By 1934, it had earned the title the Silent Sports Car. Which is just brilliant, isn't it?
It really is. A paradox, silent and sports car. How did they pull that off? What made it both things?
It perfectly captured what made it unique. It was that combination of performance with refinement. That was the key. The silent part came from Rolls-Royce's DNA. Meticulous engineering, sound insulation, engine balancing, a smooth chassis. It was quiet, comfortable, luxurious inside.
So Rolls-Royce influence.
Exactly. But the sports car part came from the J1 engine, the responsive handling they'd engineered into the modified chassis. It genuinely performed. It was quick. It handled well. It basically proved that a sports car didn't have to be noisy, rough, and uncomfortable. You could have both performance and refinement. And that became a huge selling point.
A unique proposition in the market. Now, speaking of sports car, did this new Bentley completely abandon the old Bentley racing heritage? Or did Rolls-Royce, surprisingly, embrace it?
This is fascinating. It was a significant departure from typical Rolls-Royce policy. But yes, they did get involved in racing, again, selectively. They supported a driver named Eddie Hall in the 1934 Ulster TT. That's a tough road race.
So not just for publicity?
No, it was more than that. They explicitly used the extreme conditions of the TT for testing and innovative modifications. The racetrack became their laboratory, a way to push the car, find weaknesses, develop improvements under pressure. It was also a smart way to publicly reaffirm Bentley's sporting bloodline.
Using racing for R&D, basically, while also getting the performance credentials out there. Makes sense. And did it perform well in these events?
It did. The Derby Bentley showed respectable performance at the Ulster TT over several years. And remarkably, one even competed at Le Mans as late as 1950. So yeah, it wasn't just marketing hype. The silent sports car really could hold its own.
And over time, driving itself changed. You had things like the German Autobahns appearing, allowing much higher sustained speeds. Did the car need to evolve?
Absolutely. Those new conditions, driving flat out for long periods, put different stresses on the cars. So extensive changes had to be made. Engineers had to take a really close look at critical parts, like the crankshaft's oiling system. They had to develop new materials for bearings that could handle the higher speeds and temperatures.
So continuous improvement driven by how people were actually using the cars. They couldn't just rest on their laurels.
Not at all. It shows that commitment to ensuring the car remained capable, reliable, even as the world changed around it. It forced ongoing innovation, making the car even more robust.
And looking back from today, that Bentley name, which was so close to disappearing.
It's incredible, isn't it? From being on the verge of extinction, the Bentley brand, revitalized by Rolls-Royce and that first 312L, has risen right to the forefront of the luxury car industry. Today, it's still synonymous with elegance and innovation. That name carries immense weight, building on the legacy established by cars like the Derby Bentley. It's proof of how that initial crisis, that bold acquisition, and that clever engineering really created something lasting.
What a story. We've traced Bentley's path from near death in the Depression, through that really clever takeover by Rolls-Royce, and into the engineering genius that created the 312 liter, the silent sports car.
Yeah, it's a classic case study, really, how icons can be forged when things are toughest. That pressure, that adversity, it forced Rolls-Royce and Bentley into making these radical changes, these strategic shifts.
Which ultimately created this incredible, enduring legacy.
Exactly. That makes you think, doesn't it?
It really does. So for you listening, reflecting on this journey, Bentley's resurrection, the birth of the silent sports car out of economic chaos, what does it make you think about that link between crisis and breakthrough, between challenge and ultimately lasting success? It's not just cars, is it? It feels like a lesson that applies almost anywhere, something to ponder.